You're listening to U-Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Providing unbiased opinions on all things Utah football and basketball.
Welcome to this episode of U-Talk Podcast. Just in case you didn't know, we're adding an additional episode a week to the U-Talk podcast. It was just once a week on Mondays. Well, now you're getting an additional episode on Wednesdays with me, Grant Bagby, contributor manager at TornbySports.com, and with Joseph Silverswig, one of our newest Ute writers who's been writing weekly and will be also joining in for the podcast. This Wednesday show, today we're recording on Thursday, but normally on Wednesday show we'll be featuring more of a game preview, really looking ahead, and our goal will be to give you some stats and things to think about, as well as bring in an interview with a media member from the Utah opponent of the week. This week we're going to be talking to Todd McKim, who does the sideline reporting for the Cal Bears. He's also the head guy when it comes to basketball as far as the play-by-play. So we'll be talking to him shortly, but real quick, Joseph and I wanted to start off the show talking about the what was a pretty epic game, or I will say epic, against USC last week. Specifically, you know, we wanted to give out a game ball. And, Joseph, I mean, we've talked previously, but who do you want to give that game ball to for that USC game?
You know, I'm going to go out a little bit. I'm going to go ahead and give it to the left side of the offensive line. So we'll split it between Isaac Adesanya and Garrett Bowles. Looking over the numbers from last week, the rushing numbers were really impressive, and the offensive line numbers, it's hard to measure offensive linemen. But they got an 86% conversion ratio on third or fourth and short, didn't give up any sacks, and only got tackled for a loss on 15% of run plays. All of that's some of the best numbers you can get in the nation. And USC did not have a great defensive line this year, but still a USC defensive line. So I think that they're worth a lot of props. And if we can get Stevie T to give pointers to every defensive lineman, we're going to face it. Wouldn't be a problem for me.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of crazy. I mean, one thing that's been talked about throughout the season has been the offensive line with what was a pretty bad performance against SUU, and they've progressively gotten better. But a common trend I've seen on social media has been giving Garrett Bowles a hard time about some of his penalties. But it seems like, you know, the line's coming together, and he's really starting to put down some pretty impressive blocks.
Yeah, you know, a false start is what stands out to a lot of fans. But if you start breaking down and going play by play and seeing how he performed on those plays, you see that he's really been an excellent asset, and he's gotten a lot of yards for the Utes that another tackle might not have been able to get. So certainly a net positive, and I think as he gets used to playing a different kind of game with more energy and bigger opponents, he'll probably start cleaning up those issues that he has, and he'll be the force of nature that we all expect him to be.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like some of the players are already saying he is the force of nature. He just needs to get a little bit, just continue to get more in the groove. Well, I really didn't want to spend a ton of time on USC. I mean, we've had from Friday to today for everyone to really be hashing it out everywhere, social media, in radio, TV, everywhere. So, but I did want to point out that we had a different game ball than most I've heard. But, you know, really want to get into our interview. Joining us today is Todd McKim, does the sideline reporting for the Cal Bears, does the play-by-play for the basketball, and has graciously joined us to take some time out of his busy day and talk some Cal Bears. How are you doing today, Todd?
I'm doing great. Another beautiful day here in Northern California.
I have a feeling that those are not hard to come by in Northern California.
Yeah, it's been a strange week, guys. I mean, we started the week with temperatures 100 degrees north of San Francisco, where I live, and now today it's going to be like 75, so kind of up and down. But it's perfect for grape growing and the grape harvest that's in full swing right now, so we can't ask for anything better.
Awesome. Yeah, sounds like the perfect weather then for what's going on there. Well, Todd, I mean, I kind of want to get started. I mean, you know, Utah fans are obvious. I mean, I'm sure they follow the Pac-12 in general, but I'm not sure how well many of them follow each individual team. Can you give us an idea of, you know, just what the general expectations were coming into the season for Cal and how you feel they've lived up to or disappointed on those expectations?
Well, coming off a year in which they went 8-5 and won a bowl game against the Air Force Academy, but losing the number one draft pick to the Los Angeles Rams and Jared Goff and losing his top six receivers, I don't think there were a lot of high expectations. And so as a result, with a 2-2 record, they're probably right about where a lot of people thought they would be. I think the team and the coaches felt that maybe at this point in time, they should be 4-0, and probably could be 4-0, woulda, coulda, shouldas. But defeated Hawaii and Australia pretty easily. Had a game at San Diego State, a wild offensive game that the Bears missed a touchdown pass in the last minute. They might have won that game against a team that could eventually be undefeated at the end of the year in the Aztecs. Come back home for the home opener and upset 11th-ranked Texas. And then go on the road last week, build up a 14-point halftime lead, and then watch Arizona State score 31 points in the fourth quarter, including a pick six and a onside kick that was returned for a touchdown, something you don't see every day. So could have been 1-3, could be 4-0, and they're kind of right in between there at 2-2. So they're probably on pace to what a lot of people's expectations were going into the season.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, you know, the Cal lost Goff and lost the top six wide receivers, but have brought in Hanton, brought in Stovall, I'm blanking out on the third wide receiver's name right now, but you know, have almost completely reloaded this offense in the terms of quarterback and wide receivers. How do you feel? I mean, how surprised were you by that? And what do you think of the dynamic duo between what I would say is the dynamic duo of Webb and Hanson?
They went out and got Davis Webb late in the process. He transferred as a graduate student from Texas Tech and had lost the job down there to a guy that's actually leading the country in passing yards per game, not in total yards, but per game, because Texas Tech has played one less game than Cal. So Davis Webb came in, and he had a lot of work to do to get caught up, but he knew the system. Jake Spavital was the offensive coordinator at Texas A&M, and he's part of that, you know, tree of air raid that's now, you know, bear raid here in California. So he knew the system. It's just he didn't know the receivers. And one of the first guys he got to know was Chad Hanson, and they started throwing the football virtually every day, you know, during the summer, and they've developed a wonderful chemistry. Chad Hanson has kind of come out of nowhere, but I think the Bear coaches felt that Chad Hanson had a chance to be as good or better than any of the receivers they had a year ago. He's 6'2", good size, real good strength, amazing body control, and surprisingly faster than most people think he is. So he's turned out to be a really dynamic receiver, and as you mentioned, he got 50 receptions already this year. He's halfway to the Cal record of 100 in a season. And then as far as the other receivers were concerned, they had actually recruited very well at the receiver position the last couple of years. They have a kid by the name of Brandon Singleton, who was the Louisiana State champion in the hurdles. His dad played in the NFL for the 49ers, Nate Singleton. You mentioned Marquis Stovall, I think a name that a lot of Utah fans are aware of in the recruiting process. He had decommitted from USC and, you know, maybe he came down to Utah and Cal in the last minute, came in early, had a great spring. So they've recruited well at receiver, but it's been getting that bond, that chemistry, that confidence between quarterback and receivers that is developed maybe quicker than some people thought, and it's only going to get better as the year goes on.
Yeah, Davis Webb coming into this, he's familiar with the offense. He's clearly got chemistry with Hanson. He's building it with the other wide receivers. I mean, how do you expect the youths, or how have other teams approached trying to maybe rattle Webb or get this offense to slow down?
Yeah, a couple of things, I think. First of all, I think teams have gone – Arizona State went to some press coverage, tried to do some things with Chad Hansen as far as bracketing. In fact, one of the interceptions in the game was a pass that Webb threw into double coverage with a linebacker slash safety in ASU's system, jumped the route when Hansen was double-teamed. So they're going to do more of that. But he still had 10 receptions in the game because he's got the ability to go up and get those jump balls. Kind of like for you guys, Tim Patrick has that ability too. He can go up and get balls, those 50-50 balls between defensive backs and wide receivers. So he can make those plays. And so the other thing, and this is what Utah does so very, very well, is they get pressure on the quarterback with that front four. I mean, that's their whole concept, is they're going to pressure the quarterback. They're going to get to him. They're going to hit him, as they did last year with Jared Goff, and they're going to do some things in the secondary, not only because they have good athletes back there, but schematically as well. So I think it's a combination of both getting pressure on the quarterback and also at the same time doing some different things in the secondary to try to confuse the quarterback, make him second-guess his throw, maybe take that extra half second or second to make the throw, and then be in position to make the play.
Yeah, no, last year was a pretty interesting game with the sense of, you know, Goff still went number one in the NFL draft. Both teams were undefeated coming into last year's game, and then there were five interceptions. And a lot of I've heard a lot of people give credit to the Utes' ability to disguise coverage, confusing up Goff in that point. Would you agree with that analysis, and do you think they could do the same thing to Webb?
Well, I'm certainly sure they will try, and they did do that against Jared Goff. He had a couple of passes where he just didn't read the coverage right, and Utah, to their credit, and they're always really good at this. I mean, I think they had 34 interceptions as a team last year. That was a lot more than anybody else in the league. In fact, Cal was second. So they're just really, really good on defense. All that considered, Cal had the football at the 21-yard line with a chance to win the game at the end. So I think, despite all the adversity that Jared went through in that game, I think scouts had to be somewhat impressed that he kept his team in the game and had a chance to actually win what normally should have been about a 3 or 4 touchdown victory with a chance to win. So sometimes when you make a lot of mistakes, you can still impress by being tough enough to come back and make some plays to give your team a chance to win. And so I think that was part of the reason why he went so high, because he has a great demeanor, and eventually – maybe not this year, maybe not the next couple of weeks, but eventually I think he's going to be a good NFL quarterback.
Yeah, well, I have no indicators as to say why he wouldn't be personally. We've talked about some of the key players, wide receivers, quarterbacks. What would be a surprise player that maybe we're not hearing about, that Utah fans really don't know about, that you could see having a major impact in the game?
Well, I think if Cal is going to win the football game and have a chance to win the football game, they've got to do something on defense. They've got to get some stops or some turnovers. And one guy that's been pretty consistent, the borderline spectacular at times this year, is a sophomore defensive end by the name of Cam Saffold. So for your listeners watching the game on Saturday, he wears number 51, defensive end. Just got a motor, one of those guys that never stops, is learning and getting better by leaps and bounds. He's second on the team in tackles, which is pretty impressive for a guy that's got his hand in the dirt. Leads the team in sacks, tackles for losses. In fact, he's third in the country in tackles for a defensive lineman. So if he can get some pressure, which will be challenging against a very good, as you guys talked about, very good offensive line for the Utes, if he can get some pressure and force Troy Williams to cough it up or hurry some things, that would give the Bears at least a chance in this football game against a very balanced Utah offense.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up the offense, Troy Williams, of course, and you brought up Tim Patrick earlier. From an outsider's perspective, I can tell you Utah fans are really high on our three-headed monster of running backs in Moss, Shine, and McCormick. How do teams approach the fact that the Utes are going to be using three different running backs in the backfield?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to play the system more so maybe than the individuals. All of these guys are about the same size, somewhat similar styles. Shine's a local kid here from Oakland, so he's going to have a lot of incentive in this football game. So I think you have to play the system as much as anything. I think the dimension that Utah has been missing since they joined the Pac-12 conference is the passing game. They've not had consistency in the passing game. They haven't had the deep threat that can make you, you stretch the defense. So I think now with Troy Williams, I was very impressed with his fourth quarter presence against both Utah or against BYU and USC, and his ability to make some plays with his legs. I think you have to defend the system, but you've got to stop the run first. And if you can't stop the run, the Bears found out last year when Booker went for 220, then you're going to have some problems against play action pass. So if the Bears can't stop the run, and they haven't stopped the run much all year, then it's going to be a long day.
Yeah, I mean they've been giving up over 230 yards a game up to this point. So I'm kind of expecting the Utah running backs to do some damage. But it'll be interesting. I mean, one thing I've actually noticed that I didn't know Cal was as good at, it seems like the defense is doing a decent job at turning over the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, they were really good last year in most games. Obviously, the Utah game kind of upset the apple cart as far as your equation. But at the end of the year, they were one of the best in the league in takeaways. They had 24, did a really good job, and that kind of saved them. You know, when you go and have the statistics they had last year, which are very similar to what they are this year as far as total yards per game, if you don't get turnovers, then it's going to be a long night. So that I think, is the key. Cal has got to force some Utah mistakes, whether that's interceptions, fumbles, or sacks, or whatever it happens to be, because Utah is very good at controlling time of possession. You know, what were they last week, 37 minutes or so against USC. So when the other team has the ball as much as Utah wants to have it and controls the game in that regard, you've got to force some mistakes, and that would give, you know, Cal a chance to get their offense on the field and then have a chance to win this football game.
Yeah, no, so, you know, based on all the points and answers up to this point, you know, the three keys to the game that I'm seeing, as you've discussed with us, would be, you know, Cal's getting pressure on Troy Williams and potentially slowing the game. So the battle in the trenches right there, the turnover battle, and then time of possession, since that's what Utah's goal is going to be, is to really hold on to that ball. Would you add any additional keys to the game other than those three?
Well, I definitely think turnovers is the key, and the two losses for Cal, San Diego State, and last week against ASU, they were minus in the turnover category, and in both games they gave up a pick six. I mean, they just can't do that and hope to survive against Utah. I think they have to somehow create some big plays downfield in the passing game, easier said than done, because that means you got to hold the ball a little bit longer, and that gives the defensive line a chance to get to the quarterback. And then I think they have to somehow find a way to get a draw in the special teams, because Utah under Kyle has been fantastic in special teams. Great kicker, great punter, great return people. You know, they have the ability to win that phase of the game. So they need to get an even matchup in special teams to have a chance, because Utah can win games in the special team factor of the game, the section of the game. And if they win the special teams, it'll be really difficult for Cal to win.
Yeah, well, Utah fans love special teams after these last years. I mean, really, since joining the Pac-12, I mean, the special teams have been amazing. I wanted to end the interview a little bit more of a fun question for you. You know, you do sideline reporting for football. You're at every game for basketball doing the play-by-play. What sport's your favorite sport between basketball and football?
I guess it depends on the season in which you're in. I played basketball in college. I've always loved basketball. I love the pace of the game, the athleticism. Football is a different game in that there's so much strategy in football, in my opinion. I mean, you know, schemes are big. I mean, obviously, you have to put your players in the proper position, I think, in that regard. Basketball is more of a reactionary game, where you, again, you put them in what you hope is the best position, but a lot of times it's guys, you just go play in some respects. Yeah, you have some basic sets and you're trying to do this, but I just love the reaction of basketball. And I like the fact that, quite frankly, everybody on the court basketball game has to have all the skills. You have to be able to shoot, you have to be able to pass, you have to be able to dribble, you got to be able to play defense. So I've always loved basketball in that regard. But, you know, quite frankly, there's nothing more exciting than the beginning of a football season, because after you've waited, you know, months and months for, you know, something to really put your heart in, and football rolls around in August, then you start playing the games. And you only play once a week, so every game becomes, you know, paramount and much more important than maybe in basketball. There's nothing like the start, and there's nothing like finally getting into conference play as well, when you know a little bit more about the teams and you're trying to race for that championship. So it depends on the time of the year, but, and I like them both for different reasons, but, you know, push came to shove, just love basketball.
All right. I'm right there with you, Todd. Push came to shove, I'm going basketball all the way. Well, I really appreciate you taking some time to join us today. Is there any kind of website or, you know, your Twitter handle or whatnot where people can find you and read your analysis?
I don't print anything, and I seldom tweet, but you know, you can get a hold of me at the hashtag Cal Voice if you want to follow anything. But I'm not big on social media. I guess I'm one of the oddballs in this age of, you know, LinkedIn and Twitter and the, you know, Facebook and all that kind of stuff. But occasionally I will tweet, and I will do some things on Saturday. So if anybody would like to join, that'd be awesome.
All right, cool. Well, we'll look for that hashtag Cal Voice, and thanks again for joining us.
Hey, anytime. Good talking to you.
All right, that was Todd McKinn from the Cal sideline reporter for the football games and play-by-play for basketball, and I felt he gave us a lot of good insight. Don't know if you have anything you want to follow up on from that, Joseph?
Yeah, I think that's important when you're talking about pressuring Webb, that you understand that Webb is actually really, really good against the blitz. He's got a NFL quarterback rating of 139.5 against blitz plays. Where he has trouble is when he's under pressure and when he's not blitzed. So I think if the Utes, and this is always the way, and it's sort of the Utes' MO, if the Utes are able to bring pressure with four guys, maybe five occasionally, they're going to be able to disrupt him. But I think because of the way Sonny Dykes runs his offense, there's so many receivers out there to throw to that if you're bringing down safeties or linebackers to add pressure, there's going to be an open man, and Webb knows how to find him. So the key is to use traditional approaches and get that pressure without having to give up your extra pass defenders in the pass game because of the way that Sonny Dykes runs things.
Yeah, I mean, I'm this game more than I would say more than USC kind of intrigues me, because you've got your bear raid offense, as Todd referred to it, and you've got from Cal, where they're hurry up, they want to play, get the offense going, and you've got Utah, where it is ball controlled. I mean, as much as the Utes won the game with a bunch of awesome passing plays last week against USC, this team's still going to be a run-first team, and they're going to be trying to control the ball. So you've just got these completely different styles of play that are going to come at it on Saturday. I'm just really intrigued to see how it all plays out. I mean, which style wins out is ultimately what I'll be watching for. But, you know, I know one reason people love your articles is you give us some stats to think about, and I know you've been doing some research on chunk plays, and so I'm wondering what do you got for us as far as stats to watch for this Cal game?
You know, I've been taking a look at that, and something that Utah's always been really good at is limiting chunk plays, and you even saw that against USC. They were getting high yardage averages, but there were relatively few 30, 40, 50-yard plays. We mostly kept the ball in front of us, and you know, they got tackles. They just gave up some ground on the way to getting those tackles. So I took a look this week at what happens when teams that are good at getting chunk plays go up against teams that are better at stopping chunk plays. And what I found is that you see something like what you saw last week against USC, who's a team that's good at getting chunk plays, where the yardage numbers stay up. Occasionally you'll see, you know, Michigan take somebody on. BYU got a lot of chunk plays last year when they played Michigan. They just got swallowed up. I think they got 2 yards per pass in that game. But for the most part, what you see is they'll still get their yards, but what you're trying to capitalize on is those turnovers and create opportunities for interceptions. And you see about a 10% increase in interception rate when a chunk play offense takes on a chunk play defense. And I don't think it's really news to Utes fans that turnovers are going to be the story in more or less every game they play. But I think particularly when you're up against a Bear Raid or a chunk play offense, you have to make your hay that way because they're going to get down the field, and you can't really stop that. So you have to bring an end to the drives one way or the other. And the easiest way to control that is with interceptions, especially with as much as Cal puts the ball in the air.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. I'm really intrigued. I mean, the question I thought of for you and me as we're doing this, or as you were talking about that, was where would you put the under-over for interceptions or turnovers in this game for Utah?
I think Webb's got 5 on the season. I think if the Utes pick up, I'll put it this way. I think if the Utes pick them off twice, we're going to win the game. If it's less than that, it's going to be a coin toss. I do believe in the Utes' ability to sort of hang with Cal. I mean, they really don't play defense. But whether they can or can't isn't so much the question. They just don't stop people. Although it's worth noting that those 31 points in that ASU game did come off of some turnovers and funky plays. I think there was a onside kick return for a touchdown, which isn't really something you could hold against that Cal D. But I think it's going to be a shootout if we can't pick the ball off. If we get 2+ interceptions, it's going to hold that Cal offense down enough that the Utes are going to be able to win by more than a score.
Yeah, I mean, Cal defense is really interesting to me because, like you referenced, you know, there were some funky things on ASU. I mean, 14 points easily were a pick six and a onside kick return for a touchdown.
Still 37. You know, so that's more points than we ever want to give.
Yeah.
Up, so.
But true. But for Cal, where they're averaging over 40, and in their wins, they're scoring over 50. I mean, the interesting thing about the Cal defense is, and I believe I heard Todd in a different interview talk about this, is, you know, they lost 4 linebackers. They've lost a ton of depth at safety. I mean, this team's kind of from what I gather, is this defense, especially in the, you know, the linebacker and secondary, is really thin due to injuries and transfers and just a couple players retiring. I mean, they've just really taken a hit in the depth. So, like, you know, I feel like there's almost like this question mark, because they even lost a key player last week against ASU. I believe it was another safety they lost. So, as much as I want to say, yes, I mean, they're crushing the, you know, Cal just doesn't care about defense. Part of me is like, maybe it's just a depth issue right now this year, where I feel like, you know, they've been putting some recruits over there. They've one of their best safeties was a top recruit last year. So I think they're going to start, not this year for this game, but I think you're going to start seeing Cal's defense actually improve. Another thing I've heard is, you know, people are like, well, Sonny's an offensive-minded coach. He's going to recruit offense, and that's the way they're going to go about doing things. But, you know, based on Utah's offense up to this time, I mean, how many years did it take before? You know, I feel like Witt hasn't been – I mean, he's conservative. Everyone knows that. But how much of it is him not recruiting for offense? Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think moving is something that we hear people talk about all the time, moving offensive players over the defensive side of the ball. And part of that is because that's where they're best suited. But I think that there's an element of Witt's preferences there. He knows that he can coach them up to be excellent defensive backs, strong safety, linebacker. So that's where he moves them rather than, you know, putting them at wide receiver or running back and letting them make plays on the offensive side of the ball. The thing about Cal is they've always recruited so well. I had them pegged last year for a real upturn in defense because they returned almost all their tackles. almost all their tackles for a loss, almost all their passes broken up. But usually that's going to indicate improvement, and you really didn't see it. They had a good, what we call a good havoc rate, which is things like interceptions, tackles for a loss, passes broken up, things like that, per play ratio of that. But other than the havoc rate, they just gave up a lot of yards, and they're continuing to do so. And at this point, I just question, given that they've recruited talent for so long and have, you know, better classes than most of the time, I'm starting to question whether Sonny Dykes is able to create the kind of defense he's going to need to contend in the North.
There's definitely validity to that. I mean, it wonders, but it seems like, you know, the Cal fans are pretty happy with the expectations based on talking to Todd, that they're happy with things as they are right now. I don't know if they have a reason to be disappointed after losing all the talent they lost, and now they're, you know, 2-2. So here we go. Let's make some picks here. What do you got for your score and pick for the Cal-Utah game this Saturday?
You know, I started out kind of down on the Utes in this game. I picked them to lose preseason, and I agreed with the line when it opened up. But as I've dug into these explosive play numbers, I'm starting to feel pretty good about the Utes. So I think the Utes are going to put up 38, and I think they're going to go ahead and beat the Bears by 8 points. I think it's going to be 38-30, Utah.
All right. I didn't look at any stats like you did, my friend, but, just gut feeling, knowing Cal's offense versus, you know, their defense and what I think Utah's capabilities are on both sides. I think Cal's kind of in for a rude awakening. I think this defense is going to come in with almost a chip on their shoulder after what happened against USC, where, you know, in the postgame, defensive players are saying, hey, the offense came through and helped us and helped carry us through the game. I think the defense kind of has taken on the identity the last couple of years where they plan to be the solid footing that this team is built upon. And I feel like Cal's going to have to, unfortunately, reap the benefits or take the punishment that comes with that. So with that and the fact that I'm 100% confident that the Utah offense is going to be able to score against Cal, my score prediction is 35-27. And, with Utah coming out on top. But ultimately, it'll all come down to the game. Hopefully, the Utes will continue their undefeated streak, and we'll be talking about another Utah victory next week.
Yeah, and I'll say that if the Utes come out with an 8-point win on the road over a pretty darn good, not perfect, certainly, but pretty darn good Cal team, I think we can start getting pretty excited about this season. It'll tell you that the Utes really are as complete a team as we hoped for, and we could start looking at maybe a South Championship, and that's just one game away from the Rose Bowl.
One game. Here we go. All right. Well, Joseph, had fun talking to you. Really enjoyed the Todd interview, and hopefully our listeners enjoyed it too. We're looking for feedback. Listeners, if you have interviews you'd like us to try to land for upcoming games or questions you want us to ask, some hard questions for our next upcoming games, please let us know. Reach out to me. I'm at GrantTBS on Twitter. Joseph, where can the fans follow you?
I'm at JSilversleg on Twitter, and you can find all that stuff if you go to Torn by Sports. You'll see my Twitter handle. You can follow me from there. It's a little tricky to spell.
I've messed up your last name trying to spell it. I mean, I can't expect anyone else to without spelling out that long name. But, yeah, if you want our content, TornBySports.com podcast is available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. If there's somewhere it's not and you want it there, we'll get it there. Just let us know. Once again, reach out to me at GrantTBS, short for Torn by Sports, and we will talk to you next week. Go Utes.
Go Utes.
Thanks for listening to U Talk, brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter at U Talk Podcast or email at utalk@gmail.com.